Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Our region is about to see a different side of longtime comedian Lisa Lampanelli, who said she was stepping away from stand-up last year and is now working as a podcaster, life coach, and storyteller. It's a new era for the woman once known as the Queen of Mean, over three decades in stand-up.
David Hasselhoff's career has become such a huge disaster, I just saw an oily pelican fly out of his ass. And you quit that cushy gig as a judge on America's Got Talent. What's wrong with you, man? That was the worst career move since Mel Gibson bought his girlfriend that tape recorder.
Lisa Lampanelli will bring her new show, Fat Chance, An Evening of Conversation and Story, to the Charles Wood Theater in Glens Falls on September 21st and the Cohoes Music Hall September 28th. Lisa Lampanelli, welcome to the Roundtable.
May I start by saying you're welcome.
Why did you make this radical change in your career last year?
I don't think it was radical from the inside, but I guess it looks that way from the outside because, it is such a big sort of 180. But I just started noticing that I wasn't sort of enjoying stand-up as much as I used to. And I always have this sort of feeling that one should quit something before they hate it. Because if you stay in something too long, it's going to come out the wrong way, like by being, just really upset in your personal life, making bad choices in other areas. I'm like, well, before I start really disliking what I'm doing, let me notice that the joy isn't there. And I kind of found these other things that are really joyful to me.
Is that what you did with journalism earlier in your life?
Yeah, that was just, I knew I'd never be one of the greats. Like with me, I was always in the past motivated by, will I be remembered and will I be one of the greats, And obviously that's sort of not in our control and I'm not really consumed with that anymore. But that where I just thought, wow, I'm kind of good at writing. I'm kind of good at, interviewing, but it's not really going to be something where I make any kind of mark. So I noticed that I really liked, the idea of doing stand-up. I said, let me try it and see if I like it. And luckily for the world and for my pocketbook, it all worked out.
Stand-ups talk about how much time you have to put in to get really good at it. So In stopping doing stand-up comedy, I mean, you put a lot of sweat equity into it and now you're not doing it anymore.
Yeah, but it's like putting, 10,000 hours into any job and going, I want to move on to something else that's semi-related, but not really related. It's like, if you're in a marriage that kind of was great for 30 years, but then you both notice yourself drifting apart, you'd be smart to make a break or really work on the thing. And I knew that a way to make a break and work on something I really loved was the storytelling aspect and the kind of show I'm doing now, which is kind of really funny, but also meaningful too. And combining the two didn't seem difficult anymore. I couldn't have done that 5 years ago. Like I couldn't combine a heartfelt message kind of hidden in the funny stories. It would have to all be funny. So it's nice to be able to combine them both. And my supreme gift for these things helped.
What didn't you like about doing stand-up anymore?
It wasn't making my, it sounds so corny, but I was looking in my book and I wasn't going, I can't wait. Like I have to have an I can't wait attitude for everything. So for instance, I went to Austria this past week and the only reason I wanted to really go was to see family. And that sounds great. Oh my God, that looks like so much fun. If it was not to see them, it would have been just another country that I couldn't care less about. So, seeing my pets, I'm like, oh, my God, I can't wait. If I can't wait to do something, then that's what I stick with. I'm not the type to torture myself just because I put in a lot of time doesn't mean I have to suffer for it.
Comedy is such an all-encompassing lifestyle because you're doing, two shows Friday night, two shows Saturday night, another city, and so on. What's your life been like not having that schedule anymore?
Oh, my God. The best days of my life are Friday and Saturday because I don't have to do anything. So I think it's a backlash from having to entertain and be, quote-unquote, on every Friday and Saturday night. If a Friday comes, I'm like, I get to actually sit in my house with friends or by myself or with the dogs or I took up ballroom dancing. I might go to the dance party at the studio or whatever and it's the happiest thing ever. So I love free time. I mean, literally, I'm so normal and boring and not lazy because I keep creating stuff, but the less the better. I'm like, it has to have a big emotional payoff for me to do it. So that's really adds up to more free time.
Do you remember the last gig you did? Did you know it would be the last, you know, stand-up set?
Yeah. No, this was in the works. I mean, this wasn't like Steve Martin when I read in his book that he just walked off stage and never returned. I mean, I'm smart financially. I talked to my financial guy and was like, hey, what's the date I can afford to quit and not work again? You know, I'm very sort of old school. My parents were Depression era, so they taught us how to save money, and they taught us don't quit, you know, don't retire before you're able to. So I was like, well, it was about a year in the works, but I did start noticing about 5 years before I quit and announced it that it didn't have that same joy for me. And again, I know joy sounds corny, but what are we doing 40, 50 hours a week if there's no joy in it?
Well, this will be one of my highlights for sure. Did you get sick of doing comedy yourself, or did you get sick of comedy?
I've never been a comedy fan. If you named five stand-ups right now, I guarantee all five I've never seen before. So I never watched stand-up even when I was a kid. Like, we grew up on the Dean Martin roast, and that was like what I thought comedy was. So it's obvious now that I look back on it, it's like, oh, no wonder I gravitated toward the roast style and the insult comic, which I still love. Oh, my God, I still watch the roast. But, like, I never liked stand-up as far as watching. So, I mean, I support a lot of stand-ups, you know, on social media that are doing the right thing and are friends or whatever, but I'm not a fan of watching it. I watch more dramas and stuff. I think that's true of most stand-ups. It's like we are way more serious than people think and boring as hell because we just want to be home alone or with other people that count. But, yeah, I think just doing it didn't have that same spark. So now with the storytelling shows, it's like, ooh, we get to be super funny, but we get to be meaningful at the same time. And I couldn't combine that in stand-up. It just, I don't have the tools for that.
You keep talking about, you know, finding joy and you know, a higher level of meaning in the work you're doing now. Yeah. Have you always been working on that in your personal life, or is this a new development?
Oh, yeah, it's funny because, like, when I was 25 was probably the first time I ever went to a shrink and started going to workshops and different self-help seminars and reading self-help books. And, you know, my mother would always be, aren't you done with that stuff yet? Because, you know, that's the age group where they don't even understand that you work on yourself. So, yeah, I've been, since I'm 25, I've been going to different things trying to figure out myself and what I need in my life and why I'm overeating or why I'm, you know, dating the wrong people or whatever my stuff was. Or so, and also I had this profound need for achievement. And literally, if I achieve nothing else in my life, it's fine. People get addicted to achievement, and I didn't want to be addicted to that anymore because it doesn't fill the hole inside. It doesn't fill it. What really fills it is love and self-acceptance and, you know, fun and joy. So, yeah, it's not something that I just sort of 5 years ago go, ooh, let me start getting self-aware. I was noticing all the stuff along the way since I was kind of in my 20s.
You're also working as a life coach now, as I mentioned, helping other people, and you're doing that on your podcast, too. How do you hook up with people, and what kind of advice do you like to give people?
Well, you know, life coaching isn't advice. It's clear of leading them to their own answers, which is why I freaking really have a problem with individual coaching, because I was doing it for a while and I was like, oh my God, you're not moving fast enough for me. So I'm like such a yenta that I want everybody to like think I'm the greatest and my advice is the best. So what I did was I pulled back from one-on-one coaching, and now during workshops, you get to sort of give out the knowledge you have, and then the people take it on their own and do what they can with it. So I'm not, don't feel as responsible for them. And also with the podcast, I like that because it's reading letters or getting calls and you sort of advice giving a bit and having them either take it or leave it. But yeah, that's my struggle is going, why aren't people changing as fast as I want them to, which just isn't any of my business. So I find that kind of hard.
You talked a while ago about losing weight and overeating, and for people who followed your career, they know that you did lose 100 pounds a few years ago and just looked radically different. What kind of change did that make in your life?
I mean, if by radically different, you mean super hot. I know. No, it was really great because it opened me up to feel more, because when you're not using food or alcohol or drugs or gambling or sex or whatever we use or achievement to, you know, numb you or to not have you work on stuff, you sort of open up as a person, get more vulnerable, get more real. And that's clearly where this kind of journey started of sort of getting more real with myself, started with the weight loss and then working on the emotional issues that kept me sort of closed off. And I think that's why the storytelling show is so much more revealing, even though it's funny, is that, oh, I'm able to actually open up now. So the weight loss was an important part of it, not the most important part of it, but it sure started everything on a roll, which was great.
Did you ever come to a good understanding of where those urges came from in the first place?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what we do is, I mean, this is definitely true for me and most of the people who I talk with about food stuff. It's like you just try to avoid your feelings. You know, Jim Carrey calls it the United States of avoidance. You know, we'll do anything not to feel. So if, I mean, this isn't someone who, say, just loves food and is a foodie and really delights in, you know, all of French food or, you know, different types of food and travels around the world. This is like somebody who sits there with a gallon of ice cream, you know, going, I just want to not feel what I'm feeling right now, so I'm going to use food or drugs or anything else. So, yeah, for me, it was just, you know, covering up feelings, loneliness, self-hate, whatever that I was working on at the time. And then I was like, oops, if I get this surgery and lose this weight, I got to not do that anymore. In fact, a friend of mine says the hardest part about losing 100 pounds is that you can't eat your feelings. You have to feel them. And that's the only thing I work on it every day, dude, because I'm like, kept it off 8 years. And I'm like, I am not sliding back. And it's not about the weight. It's about the feelings going, what am I doing that for?
How have you done it?
I literally always, every day, I'm like, am I emotionally hungry or am I physically hungry? And if I'm physically hungry, I eat. And yeah, I lose the battle sometimes, definitely. Like sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling a certain way and I'm just tired and I just need comfort, so I'll have a little something. But I think the beauty is just keep working at it every day, because people give up. And it's so sad because then they die earlier, they're unhealthy, and I'm just thrilled that I'm able to every day work on it and have the opportunity to every meal go, okay, let's do the right thing with food, and even if I do the wrong thing, I forgive myself and do better the next meal. That's the best part about food as an addiction. You don't have to lose all your sobriety like an alcoholic who takes a drink and then it's like, uh-oh. Now, how do I get back on track? Like, we can really have more power over food than it has over us.
Let's talk a little bit about your show, Fat Chance, An Evening of Conversation and Story. Getting ready to speak with you, I tried to seek out a clip, you know, so I could be prepared, and it's so new that those don't exist yet. So what's it like?
Yeah, and probably they won't, because, you know, I didn't register the script. I just think it's, like, very... It's weird with plays or stories. You kind of don't really put it out there in print because you don't want somebody else doing it. It's different than stand-up. So what's great about it is, again, it's sort of about this journey of the storytellers, including myself. And I do this show with a guy, Frank Liotti, and our different struggles with food, body image, growing up Italian, which, you know, you can imagine Italian, Jewish, Latin American, we use food for everything. So we do a lot of stories about those things. But again, then we do a really intimate, lively Q&A because suddenly everybody, since they know me as now doing this kind of coaching and workshops, they come with a lot of questions about what they're struggling with. And I try to do my best to help, but with a little bit of humor. And yeah, it's a really cool show. Like, I love it. Honestly, if there was, I just wouldn't do it if I didn't love it, because I can't be bothered, you know? So it just, I think about it and I go, oh my God, I can't wait. And I haven't felt like that about work in probably 5-6 years.
Are people surprised who know you from your background in comedy and your sort of mean one-liners and so on? Are they surprised with your positivity now?
Well, the thing is, I think the only reason they're not is because Howard Stern, when I announced it on his show, which was a really smart move on my part and a really sweet move on his part, he was very serious about it and took it really seriously. And he was like, I get it. People evolve. This is what happens. You live a life and you don't stay the same. I mean, look at how much he's evolved as an interviewer, et cetera. And I'm like, I think because he took it seriously, then Dr. Drew called me and Wendy Williams. And there was just so much press about it that people were like, oh, yeah, that's what she does now. But I do get the occasional, you know, post, oh, I miss you doing the roast. I miss you doing that. And I'm like, oh, that's cute. Because, like, it's nice that people love that because they're really good. We were talking about the roast last night in a meeting for another show I'm writing. And we were like, those were the best. Like, I had so much fun just killing people with those jokes. And so it's never anything I go, ooh, that was bad. That was regretful. That was problematic. It's like, no, it's freaking comedy. It's awesome.
It's no coincidence George Hamilton loves the sun. They were born in the same year. The difference is the sun is actually a star.
Do you find yourself at all writing jokes now that you won't be using? Like in your mind?
Duh, of course, because guess when I do it? This is so, I can't believe you asked me that. I do it. Award seasons kill me because I'm watching those Oscars and all the things I used to live tweet during. Mm-hmm. And you could just get off all these one-liners and just crapping all over people's outfits and just like their stupid speeches and attitudes. And I'm like, oops. I don't do that anymore. Oh, my God. I can't put hate out into the world, even though I know it's a joke. So I have to text my friends instead. I'm like, oh, my God, I hate these outfits. These women look awful. These men look idiotic. And I'm like, okay, get it out of my system.
So where are you going now? Like, let's say we're having a conversation in 5 years from now. Where do you think you'll be and what do you think you'll be doing?
If I really think everything is going to continue in this direction, which I do, because I don't do anything now, like I said, unless it's fun and goalless. Like, nothing has a goal, because I had so many goals and, you know, I did them that it's like, oh, that didn't make me feel better. I just like to, you know, have some joy in it. I'll probably still be doing these types of shows, but about different themes, because there's a real thing in me to go, oh, I want to make people feel less alone in their struggles. And so that they can laugh at themselves a little, because I laugh at myself about my feelings and stuff. So I think I'll be doing some of those probably a couple times a month, because I don't really like to work much because I'm really love being home. I want to be such a phenomenal ballroom dancer. This is my only goal, that Dancing with the Stars, by the time I'm 70, says, come to the ballroom. Because I freaking love dancing, and it's so much fun, and it's very vulnerable, and it's the next step in me working on myself. So that's my only fantasy, is that Dancing with the Stars will come knocking.
You have an agent, right? You can get on Dancing with the Stars, can't you?
No, I can't. I can't. And I wouldn't go on yet, because I want to really be decent, because I like it. I love it. I dance 5 days a week. I mean, I'm really effing serious about it. We compete and do all crazy showcases. I'm doing this really fun spoof of The Handmaid's Tale. So I go, well, I think they'll come knocking. I don't want to do anything that I have to reach out for. It's not my life anymore. I'm lucky enough that I saved some money. Not a lot. I don't live wealthy. I don't live like a rich person. I'm so normal. I use coupons at Bed Bath & Beyond like everybody else does. And I'm like, honey, just if they come knocking, I'll freaking answer that Dancing with the Stars. Believe me.
Well, Lisa Lampanelli is coming to our region for 2 shows in September. She'll be at the Charles Wood Theater in Glens Falls September 21st and Cahoe's Music Hall September 28th for Fat Chance, an evening of conversation and story. Lisa Lampanelli, I was a big fan of your stand-up, and now I'm excited to sort of move into the new era with you. So thanks for all this time.
Oh, thank you so much. And tell people they should come out if they want to laugh, if they want to feel a little something. But if they want to be insulted, they'll have to call me on my personal line.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you so much, buddy.
and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.